From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Pull back the curtain a bit, folks. It has been a crazy day here in conspiracy land. We are coming to you after several exciting, unforeseen plot twists that we will fill you in on in the very near future. But overall, good news. Overall, good things. And overall, as always, we are so happy to hang out with you today, fellow denizens of the internet. A quick question. We've been talking about this a lot off air. We've been looking forward to this. Quick question, Matt, Noel, everybody listening at home. Do you have a favorite meme?
Yes.
I love it. I love the confidence. Yes.
Oh, exactly what I'm saying. The level of confidence makes me want to hear it right away while I think through my meme Rolodex, and I'll let you know as soon as you're done.
Well, so I have to tell you. Okay.
Yeah.
I just, right before we went to record, I couldn't remember the name of it or what it was. I just remembered the image of a person looking like kind of side-eyed at the camera and smiling and putting their hand up to their head like, think about it. That's what it reads to me. And then you guys told me it's actually called the think about it meme.
Or roll safe.
Yeah. And I also just now realized because of this that that is in fact not LeVar Burton. I had assumed it was for many years, as clearly did many other internet folks who search on Google, because there's plenty of versions of that meme with his name tagged on it. I think my favorite meme format is the galaxy brain meme format. Yeah, there's like four different images of the brain, like from like a MRI type scan or let's stylized MRI scan. And there's the first one that's just kind of like a regular brain. The second one where you start to see some neurons firing. The third one where it's starting to get a little crazier. And then the fourth one where it's like utter connectivity with the universe. And that is the titular galaxy brain. Big, big fan of that one.
Yeah, and there's another version of that, which is Vince McMahon, I guess, losing his mind over a series of images. Both of those cases, Galaxy Brain and Roll Safe, are image macros, which means that you can take the visual aspect, I guess you would call it the visual implication or theme or vibe, and then you can insert captions, written words that specify or evolve the meme, and they can be used for any number of things. We'd love to see your favorite ones, and I am so impressed that you, Matt, and you, Noel, each had a favorite. That's so cool.
Well, they're favorites because they've been used in effective ways that made me laugh or think about something a little differently, mm-hmm. right? They cut through all of the internet noise to me somehow. That's why that specific one got to me.
And they cut through part of your brain, as mm-hmm. we'll come to find. So it's weird because there are folks in the audience today who knew the world before the advent of online communication. And we're not going to call anybody out, but I know there are at least a couple of us in the crowd who were around when beepers were the new thing, and not just for doctors and drug dealers. I think that's tricky.
That's for all of us, right? Everyone here, including Paul Mission Control Deccan.
I had a pager. I had a green, translucent green Motorola pager for a time.
I had a couple burners. Yeah, I mean, life just happens. And this is the thing. Memes now are social currency. They are a form of communication. They're by nature ephemeral. They move, they transform, they evolve as quickly as a passing thought. And think of that phrase again, a passing thought. You see them in countless places. Memes, generally, we're talking about internet memes when people talk about memes today, but a meme is also a commercial jingle, right? Like here's an example of a meme. New York City, you just thought of salsa, you just thought of a campfire,
commercial tropes and jingles are some of the most effective memes or propaganda in the world.
A slogan of any kind, you know, a snappy bumper sticker. I mean, a meme is just a communicative tool that is designed to be repeated and spread like a virus, you know, but like a positive virus, right?
Yeah, well, we'll see, you know. And also, we're very much in a glass house situation because this show is riddled with memes. Here's where it gets crazy, for instance. So these things, they can be funny, like the Nyan cat. They can seem nonsensical, but they are also so powerful, more powerful than you could ever imagine. And today's question is, can memes be a weapon of war? To answer this question, we have to start at the basics and correct a couple of common misconceptions. So let's start there. What is a meme? Here are the facts.
Yeah, like we were starting to talk about, I mean, a meme is essentially something at its most simplistic, a concept, a thought, an idea, a vibe, an energy, something that you can communicate and people immediately click and connect with what that is, whether it's just whether it's associating it with a particular brand or a particular ideology, or just like we've talked about, a format that you can then transpose other ideas onto. I mean, because a lot of times these meme image formats that we're talking about are pulled from stuff from pop culture. Whether it's an anime or something or a screenshot from some movie or a character, you don't think about that character anymore. It becomes wholly its own thing that is then used to disseminate the idea that you are then kind of superimposing atop it. A meme is an element of culture or system of behavior that is passed from one mind to another via very blunt instrument communicative kind of techniques, not genetic as we would typically think of, you know, complex systems of repeating and self-replicating stuff like viruses or genes. Most particularly, this is through imitation, which is the sincerest form of flattery, but it can also be weaponized, can't it?
Yeah. The way I like to phrase it is a meme is a unit of information, and non-genetic transmission is a huge part of this. Memes are transmissible. They are contagious. We talked about this in our earlier Strange News and Listener Mail segments, and we had this one of those conversations that never really ends, the debate over whether or not this contagious factor, this ability to transmit from one mind to the next, whether or not this means an idea can be considered alive. It's similar to the debate about viruses. I mean, not for nothing do people call a popular meme viral, right? Ideas move like viruses. They mutate like viruses from one iteration to the next, and they can directly affect the actions of other more orthodox living things, cough, cough, people, hearts and minds. It's weird because this term, like, this is an ancient idea, right? It probably is older than the oldest written language, but the term itself didn't come into being until 1976, when Richard Dawkins wrote a book called The Selfish Gene. And he wasn't originally talking about the internet. He was just trying to explain this process of replication, mutation, and evolution that occurs with ideas. You know, slang could also be an example of a meme, right? These days, most of the time, when you hear discussions outside academia about memes, we're talking about internet memes. And they really started to come into their heyday in the 1990s, thanks to emoticons. I love giving shout outs. You guys know this. Shout out to Scott E. Fallman, the introducer, the popularizer, dare we say the creator of the sideways smiley face made with punctuation, aka the way to put a little, you know, put a little snazz on your text message, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a big difference between, hey, it was good to see you, period, and hey, it was good to see you, you know, colon, parentheses.
Mm. Ooh, that's a little,
saucy. Yeah. and it's funny because this is like that meme. That idea, that emoticon specifically, gave birth later to emoji, and it also now is considered kind of a relic. It's kind of old school. If honestly, you know, and I think the world of you guys, you know that. But if one of you ever sent me a text with like the punctuation smiley face, I would be a little worried. I would think it was like, yeah, I would feel like you might be in an emotionally vulnerable place because you guys are masters at emoji and memes. So if it's,
Did you know I've done that to you before? I have done that to you, but on my phone, it translates it into an emoji.
It does do that. I usually use that to defray any potential like misinterpretation, like to let you know that I'm being lighthearted in some way, or I'm just like, this is not serious. The thing that we've talked about this, but the opposite effect of that to me is the period. The period to me is the most aggressive punctuation mark in all of textdom.
I know, man. We've talked about how our understanding of each other's perspectives affects the way that we communicate via text online because so much nuance can get missed. As a matter of fact, about 60% of the communication that occurs whenever people are talking in person is nonverbal. It's body language. It's tone. You know, it's things like that. The words are sort of a side effect or a clarifying factor. When we look at this, if we look at internet memes, we know that the proper dressed up with a tie on concept of an internet meme was first proposed by a guy named Mike Godwin in an article for Wired way back in June of 1993, who was riding the zeitgeist, finger on the pulse indeed. And as the internet became increasingly sophisticated, as its reach became ever broader, as its depth became ever deeper, internet memes evolved in step. That's why we talk about things like dank memes, god tier memes, stuff like that. Like you see this all the time for digital natives, as corporate America would call them, where they're like, this meme is awesome. And to explain it to you, you have to understand like 5 years of the memes leading up to this. Here's why this is funny. And Dawkins was conscious of this. He later went on to describe internet memes in particular as being altered by human creativity. He called it, quote, a hijacking of an original idea. And hijacking is a very important word here. Memes, like algorithms, can subtly alter the viewer's perception over time. Like, have you ever been caught flat-footed by a meme? You're like, haha, this is cool. What's going on here? And then you look at the source and you're like, oh, that's from a Russian troll.
Mm-hmm. Or, oh, that was some alt-right propaganda. But gosh, that was got all the lulls out of that one. That's the problem with memes, is they can be insidious in that way because they essentially are masquerading as junk food, you know, or as just some little nugget to kind of give you some lulls, but not something to be taken seriously. And that is how they are used as a tool or weaponized, is this whole idea where it's like, oh, you never see it coming because it's inherently sort of not to be taken seriously.
Well, I think the biggest factor with a meme is that it's easily shareable. It is the most shareable thing that you can possibly have for social media, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's basically an image that has text embedded into it, and you just post that anywhere and it can spread like wildfire.
And also, it's a very low investment of attention. It asks very little from the audience. You don't have to read a scientific journal. You just have to, like, you don't even laugh. You just kind of exhale slightly louder than normal through your nose. And you go, ha ha, yeah, Pepe, at it again.
You could also argue it's a very low bar for the interpretation of intention, right? So like if someone posts a meme, oh, no biggie, I thought it was funny. And like, it's going to be hard to, I mean, obviously this has changed over time, but it's a little harder to peg somebody as quote unquote spreading propaganda just because they posted some harmless meme, as opposed to like, say, posting a screenshot from a chapter of Mein Kampf.
Right. I just thought it was funny, bro. I mean, look at that. That dog.
That frog's on a unicycle, man. Look at him. Look at him go.
That boy. Oh, we're going to talk about that boy in a second. Yeah. You guys are nailing it. Like, in short, memes are more than just internet shitpost. They can be, at least in the right hands. Memes can use written language, but they don't have to do so. If we were to take, and I'm still working on optimism with mixed results, but if we were to take an optimistic stance, we could say memes can bring people together. They can bridge the gap between linguistic barriers, demographic barriers, cultural barriers. You know, who doesn't like to laugh? But let's be honest. Humans have a well-known track record. Human civilization has a bit of a reputation. The rap sheet for the species is long, and it's riddled with disappointing, alarming precedents. Humans take new technology and almost instantly ask, so how can we make this a weapon? How can we use this to get an advantage over those we see as not in our group, our community, or our tribe? Memes are no exception to this rule. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor. We'd love you to take some time and tell us your favorite memes, conspiracy@iheartradio.com. Here's where it gets crazy on Facebook. And we'll return to a world where memes are war. Here's where it gets crazy. I'm so glad you mentioned Dat Boy. So shout out to our own Dat Boy, our longtime friend of the show, personal friend of ours, the one and only super producer, Casey Pegram. You've heard him on Movie Crush. He's made films with Paul Dekant. He has a favorite meme, and it is indeed Dat Boy, which is created by Josh Duhin. Dat Boy, if you haven't seen it, it's D-A-T space B-O-I. And you can see it as a GIF. You can see it as an image macro. It is a frog precariously balanced on a unicycle with a two-part caption.
Well, my favorite is the version of it that actually has an like audio track. And it's, I think it's a computer voice. And it's like, here come Dat Boy. Here come Dat Boy.
I don't know the other part that says, oh shit.
Yeah,
what up?
Yeah. And this is spelled in cutesy internet language, right? But I don't know why I am also captivated by that. And there's something about spelling what up, WADDUP, that just is like umami to me on some cognitive level. But yes, it can be difficult to imagine something so whimsical and silly becoming a piece of information warfare, but that's exactly how some memes are being used in the modern day. And this phenomenon is a little bit older than people might assume, and it's only going to grow in the future. Mimetic warfare is asymmetrical.
I'm so sorry. I just have to chime in real quick. There's a whole song. That's what I was going from. And it goes on to say, watch him rolling, watch him go, watch him rolling, watch him go. And then here he be rolling down the street. He be rolling to the beat. He be rolling down the street. He be rolling to the beat. Watch him roll. What up? Watch him roll. What up? That's the whole song.
Perfect.
It's great. It's great.
Yeah, and it's fun. But again, this is asymmetrical, is low cost investment on the part of the audience, and it can be low cost investment on the part of the creator. Of course, the vast majority of memes we can assume are just things people think are funny and send to their friends. But you have to watch out. There are wolves in the flock here, and they are disguised just like the sheep. So this warfare is also psychological, and it can be enormously effective. Primarily because it is so often underestimated. When we see it's older than you might think, you know, you could say, well, an internet meme logically couldn't exist before the age of the internet, but I wouldn't be so sure with that. This stuff has historical roots in old school analog propaganda. Matt, you and I had talked before about wartime operations, you know, things like propaganda radio announcements, like Lord Ha Ha is one. He's a pro-Nazi propagandist character broadcasting to the UK in World War II. And, you know, then it's the war for hearts and minds, same as it ever was, dropping pamphlets before the days of GIFs.
Yes, exactly. On YouTube, I found this video posted by Andy Black Associates, and the title was "Mimetic Warfare is Not a Modern Strategy." And in it, it's archival video footage from World War II showing Allied soldiers filling up these balloons with pamphlets that would be sent over into, you know, German-controlled territory. And they were designed to fall to the ground and explode somewhat, like to an extent, and just send these pamphlets all over the place. And the whole point was to get a message into the minds of anyone living in German-occupied territory, whether those were soldiers or civilians that were you know, maybe not at all a part of the Nazi movement, but it was just to change their perception about something, to make them think about the Nazi forces that are in that area differently, or to think about the Allied forces that will eventually be coming through in a different way, or even just to get them to rise up against the Nazis that were controlling that territory. So it's just, I can't find, I've spent way too much time on archive.org attempting to find the original footage of that, but I was unable to find it. I would just recommend checking it out on YouTube for now if you can.
Well, you know what else can be a meme is a song. You know, like they're another thing that could seem very innocuous or like very, oh, this is just like for fun, right?
But it's this been. Whole pod,
yeah, it's been. Oh, she wait, or like there's another one that's somebody want, you know, anyway, yeah, these things can be definitely memeified. But there's a whole podcast series from, I forget, Pineapple Street, I think, made it, but it's called Winds of Change. And it is about the notion that the CIA helped or maybe even forced the band The Scorpions to write the song Winds of Change as a means of like influencing the fall of the Berlin Wall. The lyrics being follow the Moskva down to Gorky Park, listening to the winds of change in August summer night. Soldiers passing by, the future's in the air. I can feel it everywhere, blowing with the winds of change. And then it's take me to the magic of the moment on a glory night. Anyway, point is, if that's true, that's pretty it's slick,
not,
right?
It's not as good as the Key and Peele epic song. If you guys remember, there's a music video where it keeps a running tally of how much money the guy has when he's producing this, and it just it goes down from there. I've been on a Key and Peele rabbit hole again. I can't think of enough good things to say about Jordan Peele.
Neither can I. He's also one of the most versatile creators of our time, I think. You know, for coming from absolute comedy genius to becoming, you know, one of the most, I mean, instant first feature, you know, Oscar world. But my point is, though, there's a really good Monty Python
sketch.
Keegan
is awesome, too.
Keegan's great.
Yes, Keegan's a friend of ours, technically a coworker.
He totally is. But really quickly, I mean, the whole idea of a song, or let's say a joke. There's a really good Monty Python Flying Circus sketch where there's this joke that kills people just by virtue of saying it to them, and the joke has to be guarded and like, you know, distributed only in little pieces. I think that, looking back on it now, is kind of a cool satire of what a meme can do, or the idea of weaponizing a meme, or just the idea of how insidious an idea can be once it reaches people and then they want to pass it around, because that's what a joke does, right?
1-800-588-2300. Oh, okay. You guys didn't do it. All right.
No, I don't know.
All right. Dang.
Yeah.
There are people listening right now that changed.
Who just
did
it.
Screaming?
Yeah.
They're screaming at their radios?
Or they're saying, Empire!
We're going to say it, but we're not going to sing the song because we don't want to curse you. Cars for Kids.
No. So
that's another one. So we can also think about, first, I love this point to Jordan Peele and Keegan Michael Key. If you're listening, I think you would agree that comedy and horror are conjoined twins. They are very cognitively similar, and it's about surprise, right? Ultimately, and there's a dark side to memes as well. Like, think about in the days before the internet, think about all of the disgusting race-based caricatures that were used to dehumanize enemies, were used to persecute minorities. And unfortunately, those caricatures are with us today, albeit sometimes in more evolved forms. They're stereotypes. This practice, all of these practices we just mentioned, songs, jingles, images, macros, all of this stuff only accelerated in the age of the internet, and new variables upped the power of this sort of psychological warfare. Now, anonymity is easy. You're not anonymous to a government force, obviously. And if there's a company powerful enough, they will figure out who you are. But for the average audience member, just someone scrolling on Facebook or on Reddit, you can be anonymous. There's also the problem of false sourcing or misattribution, whether purposeful or accidental. And then, of course, there's information control because, yes, communication is democratized. More people can have microphones than ever before. But the folks who run the PA system, there are very few of them. There are very few faucets, and there are a lot of choke points there. So information can now, I would posit, be much more easily controlled than in the past. World powers know this. This isn't just your buddies. It's stuff they don't want you to know, chatting over beers or something. People in NATO, people in the UN are having moments about meme warfare. NATO has spoken about the power and the danger of memes. And from their perspective, from an international institutional perspective, these memes are a kind of guerrilla warfare. There is a fantastic report about this from a journal run by NATO called Defense Strategic Communications. It's free to read online right now. I highly recommend it if you're interested. It's called It's Time to Embrace Memetic Warfare, originally written by Jeff Giese in 2015, and he later updated it, but pulled a couple of quotes from this because I really like the way he phrases both the situation and the danger. So maybe we can start with his first just sort of like thesis statement, his lay of the land in this digital conflict.
Here's the quote. In today's globalized information environment, the ability to influence narrative and perception has become arguably the most leveraged, participatory, and relevant form of power.
Ooh, most leveraged, most participatory, and most relevant. So what does that mean? Most leveraged, again, it goes back to investment on the part of the audience and the creator. It's easy to do this, right? It's easy to use this to great effect. Participatory means that it's easy for multiple people to do this, multiple groups that may have, you know, not have had the wherewithal or the resources to wage this kind of warfare in the past. Now you don't have to print things. Now you don't have to send balloons over the border. You can just post a meme. You can do some paid advertising and you can get it out there quickly. This is a problem, to put it lightly. There's another quote he has that I thought was really interesting where he says, even for those of us who live on social media, it is sometimes difficult to appreciate how quickly information can spread, the profundity of its global scope, and the significance of its impact on perceptions, narratives, and social movements. Once one starts viewing the internet through meme-colored glasses, nice one, Jeff, you can see memetic warfare everywhere. Political campaigns, contested narratives about news, and the thoughtless memes shared by Facebook friends and in videos on YouTube.
That's right, because it's something that can easily be shared without giving it too much thought as to the validity of the point that it's making. Maybe it makes a little bit of a point that you're ideologically aligned with, but at the end of the day, you're not like fact checking your memes. But guess who does fact check memes now? Instagram and Facebook. And we'll get to, you know, the whole backlash with all of that and maybe how memes can sway elections. But I recently got a notification on Instagram for a meme that I posted like more than a year ago when the insurrection happened at the Capitol. And there was, you remember that dude with the weird kind of grand poobah hat on with the horns
QAnon
and stuff.
Shaman.
Yeah, the QAnon shaman. But I posted a meme that I just thoughtlessly shared because I'm like, surely this is probably true. But even if it's not, who cares? But you know, the idea that the Simpsons have predicted like everything, you know, It was an image of groundskeeper Willie dressed in a very similar outfit. And they just said like Simpsons did it or something like that. And I just now, a year and a half or however long later, got a notification from Instagram saying after just using independent fact checkers, we have found that the post that you shared does not meet our criteria for standards and practices or whatever the hell it was. I could pull it up, but it was like a really old post that even if it was not true, which it turns out it wasn't, I actually kind of realized that because I tried to verify it after I had posted and couldn't find this episode of The Simpsons. But who cares? Okay, the Simpsons predicted this guy. That is not an ideological sentiment. It's just more like a sentiment about the Simpsons. But yeah, because all this stuff is algorithmically driven, somehow I finally got through the filter and they decided, uh-oh, buddy, you're spreading fake news there.
Oh, boy. Yeah, and it's weird because I love that you pointed out that time gap, right? It's not, it didn't happen instantly. Somebody went back and reviewed your stuff. And yeah, just assume that anything you do on any computer might be public in the future.
But also the impact of memes require immediacy, don't they? So like, you know, screening them a year later is absolutely useless.
Yeah, like, well, like our pal, that's a very good point, Noel. Our pal Paul was talking with us off air about a vintage meme Twitter account that he really likes. And then it hit me, Paul, I don't want to put you on blast here. I'm putting me on blast, really. It hit me when we were talking about this that, you know, Paul was like, these are nostalgic, you know, these are very old memes. They're from like 2010. And I remember thinking, wait, we were doing this show. we were about to do the show, at least in 2010. And now we have to ask, what's the point? What if you run into a weaponized meme in the wild, why? What is the point of this stuff? The goals are pretty simple. One, the meme wants to get the audience to do something, like vote a certain way. You know, the subreddit, the Donald and 4chan, the poll forum on 4chan were enormously successful in that respect. The second thing would be the opposite, to get people to not do something they would otherwise do, like support a given political party or a protest, or, you know, get them to not protest against a real life physical war. And a meme, this is what we were talking about earlier, right? You pointed this out beautifully, Matt. A meme can bypass rational thought. It can cloud judgment. It's speaking to a different part of your brain, because your brain essentially is like an agglomeration of different personalities that don't always agree with each other, right? And that's why a song can touch someone differently than an essay, right? And because of this, memes are incredibly valuable. They're incredibly powerful. They're also, it's like the petty part, because, you know, the economy is, the concept of an economy is the dominant religion of this era. Memes are much cheaper to make than, say, a Tomahawk missile. And they're much cheaper to deploy than, say, sending a soldier into battle. So who is doing this? That's a question we're going to answer after a word from our sponsors. We've returned, and I have to be honest, it's a little bit frustrating for us to do this episode because there are so many strings to pull. It's a big web. There are so many rabbit holes. There are so many badgers to bag. We might not even be able to talk about the importance of hashtags in this episode, but let us know if you want to hear more. Right now, let's talk about the culprits, the guilty parties. Surprise, it's the usual suspects. Everyone is doing this. Every world power that can weaponize memes is not only doing it right now, but they've been doing it for years, and their plan is to continue because you can't argue with the price tag. There are a lot of pros in the game as well. Like, if you're listening now and you're like, hey, I want to, you know, use memes to fight for some kind of change that I believe in. I'm going to create them. I'm going to spread them. May the odds be ever in your favor, etc., but you are outmatched. There are state-run organizations doing this on a 24/7 basis. They don't sleep, and they're after your mind.
Yeah, and in the minds of everyone who opposes their government position. No, I'm just joking. But, I mean, it is possible, and it is true, right? And as you said, Ben, it's everybody. It's not just the enemies of your government. It is your government. Wherever you are, it doesn't matter. There's one really just good example, I think. And again, we often point to China or Russia in these situations because we've, from our side, we have a government that's trying to prove these things, right? There are investigators trying to prove that there are armies of meme generators from the opposition. So when, from our standpoint, we could say, yes, there are definitely groups like China's infamous 50 Cent Party, the Internet Water Armies. These are two of the first recognized government troll groups that were out there and were active, and they are still active. But that's just to say, we can't point to, I don't know, Ben, is there an actual troll army group within the U.S. government that we can point to. I wasn't able to find one that's like got a name, right? Like the 50 Cent Party or the, you know, something cool like that, that the U.S. government has maybe within some data center somewhere where there's groups of people working on this.
Yeah, a lot. You're right. A lot of the Western reports are focusing on governments that are considered to be U.S. geopolitical rivals. But make no mistake, you know, like if you want to see some trolling or you want to see some effective use of memes, then I would look to the way that the U.S. military industrial complex uses memes as a means of recruiting new soldiers. It's, you know, like, and that's related, but it goes even deeper than memes in that regard, because, you know, the U.S. military also paid to have a presence in sports games, also paid to have presence in films, also paid to make video games, actually, some of which are not bad. But the idea here is, again, to bypass critical thought. And there is no one above the fray in the world of global politics. Everybody who can get down on this buffet is in all-you-can-eat beast mode.
And just while we're still here talking about governments doing this in this space, I want to recommend everybody heads over to archive.org and checks out a video there titled "The Big Picture: Defense Against Enemy Propaganda." This was created by the Department of Defense, Department of the Army, and the Office of the Deputy Chief of Staff for U.S. Operations, U.S. Army. And it was, I think, created maybe in 1974, and it was put out in, at least it was released in this way in 1984. For others to see, not just as an inside video or an internal video.
Well, doesn't this kind of work both ways, though? Because, I mean, you've got examples of, like, Xi Jinping and the Chinese government, like, banning Winnie the Pooh memes because they were mocking him, you know? Like, or I think Putin, that he banned some memes in Russia because they were sort of, like, criticizing his views on the LGBTQ plus community. It's interesting, like, because, I mean, they can be used as weapons against the people, but can also be used as weapons for the people. And it's kind of a weird look when, like, governments ban memes that are criticizing them, but it also, like, shows how powerful they can be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then you encounter what is sometimes called the Streisand effect. If you ask people on the internet to just not share a thing, then it moves to the top of the list of things people want to share. This has also occurred, you know, with, I believe it was the performer Beyonce, who asked for a unflattering photograph of her in a concert to be removed. And that just made it go viral. These operations are everywhere. They exist in numerous countries. They've evolved at a staggering pace. You don't need to rely on old school propaganda. You can target an audience, and through algorithms and machine learning, you can find an audience or a cause with astonishing precision. You can control the flow of conversation. You can redirect from one issue to focus on another. We are in a new era of whataboutism. Right. And it's tough to catch it when it happens. In China, in that case in particular, these enterprises, like Matt mentioned, 50 Cent Party, Internet Water Armies, they're also tasked with operating on the domestic front. And for a long time in the U.S., there was a law that prevented the U.S. from actively propagandizing its own population. That law has quietly gone off the books. So be careful what you read. Voice of America applies to everyone now.
Thanks, Voice Obama. right? That was Obama administration.
It was during that administration. I believe you're correct. And with the case of China, and now, of course, with the U.S., this idea of operating on the domestic front means that these memes can be weaponized to decrease dissent, to shore up a positive image of the government, and then also to course correct conversations that run counter to the status quo. Most of the tactics of online information wars can seem kind of abstract, right? Let's be honest, it's a bunch of ones and zeros dashing around in a digital cloud, but they do have real world consequences. And we know this because the concept of information warfare went mainstream and came to widespread attention during and after the 2016 U.S. presidential election. And a lot of it was because the Russian government, through various proxies and various plausible deniability schemes, they spread false information via social media in an attempt to sow chaos and possibly sway the election toward Donald Trump, who did win the 2016 election. Their attempt was successful. The question is, the thing that historians are still going to go back and forth on for the next few decades is how much of a role Russian trolls actually played in that election. They were definitely in there. They were trying to move. They were trying to shake some stuff up. But were they the force that swung the needle? That's a question people haven't answered. We do know that Russia was involved, though, because investigators in the U.S. trace the warfare back to a St. Petersburg group, St. Petersburg, Russia-based group, called the Internet Research Agency. Fellow conspiracy realists, what do we immediately assume when something has a really like blank
kind of vanilla?
Internet Research Agency.
Also the IRA.
Probably that it's nefarious in some way, shape, or form, right?
Yes, absolutely. They used false identities and targeted disinfo campaigns to stir up domestic dissent and instability in the United States. And then they boosted their signal through paid promotions, which means that social media companies who are US-based entities were collaborators. Whether or not they knew that's what they were doing, that is what they were doing. And this is this is a point that we always have to hit, because like, it doesn't matter how you feel about COVID-19. It doesn't, to these guys at least, it does not matter how you feel about a protest or a president. You know, they don't care how you feel about Black Lives Matter. They were advertising to, they were attempting to influence people who were already against or for a given thing. They were just trying to widen the divide between the American public. And this goes back to, you know, Foundations of Geopolitics, which is sort of written by Russia's own Alex Jones. This is crazy. We talked about 4chan and the Donald subreddit. They were excellent examples of how to use weaponized memes. It's not a political point. It's, or at least it's not one applied to any one political party. Everybody's doing it. Some audiences might be more, you know, like higher value than others, but every person is a potential target. And at this point, we have to ask, what does it all meme?
I know. Oh, boy. So speaking of memes, I'm just rethinking what I said in this episode. I did say, thanks, Obama. I said it as the meme version of that. Is that a thing, or am I thinking?
Yeah, that's a thing.
Silly?
That's a meme.
Okay.
That's a meme.
Yeah. Said it as a meme. So I didn't offend people. Sorry about that. Well, the first thing that it memes is that, you know, you can no longer assume that a meme is actually what it appears to be, which is kind of sad because it does suck kind of the fun out of it. Like this was a cool hot air balloon and we're deflating it. Sad.
I just wanted something to laugh at while I'm pooping. You know what I mean? Now, why am I a pawn in this crazy new battleground? You're right. We can't assume. We can't assume that a meme is what it appears to be on the surface. We have a series of things, a series of questions we can ask that can help us determine what the true goal of that communication is. First, we have to ask why a meme came to our attention. Like, honestly, I would say, Noel, you kill it with memes. So if you send me and or Matt a meme, then I'm going to trust it. I'm just going to be like, that's hilarious. Noel has his finger on the pulse. And that's true. I'm a fan of your meme game.
I appreciate it. And it's something that I really enjoy. It's just like a form of entertainment, but it can be like satire. The ones that I share don't typically rely on being some sort of transmitter of truth per se. You know, they're more just like concepts, right? And I try not to be super political in the things that I post. But I mean, I think they can be a really effective form of satire because you just get it. You know, it clicks. But as I mentioned with the whole Groundskeeper Willie thing, there certainly are things that even like an internet algorithm could pull out and be like, oh, this is actually misinformation. I would draw the line, whereas if the misinformation doesn't really matter and in and of itself is part of the parody or part of the absurdity of it all, then who cares? But we know that these things can be insidious and the misinformation can be buried within them, and that little grain of whatever that thing that's trying to tug at you and your brain and or heartstrings with, those things can absolutely spread just by virtue of the fact that you don't put that much credence in something as simple and ultimately kind of frivolous as a meme.
Yeah, and let's look at the other side. This is what happens to people more often, I would argue. An algorithm, some kind of arcane calculation, sends this meme your way. You're scrolling through your feed, and your feed is curated to bubble you. The for-profit entities that run social media, and we've said this at length before, and unfortunately it's a real conspiracy, they want to keep you engaged, and they want to keep you engaged by showing you stuff they think you will agree with. And so you will start to feel like you are part of something bigger than yourself. You'll start to feel like a lot of people agree with you, and then you will be more likely to become a transmitter yourself. You'll get infected with an idea. And that's, you know, the idea here, whether or not it's a good idea, doesn't matter. It's just how it spreads. So you have to ask yourself, what does this meme want from me?
What does this meme for you?
Yes, yes. Ask not what this meme can do for you, but ask what this meme wants you to do for it. If the meme is like a call to action, that would be the most extreme end of the spectrum. It's usually a little more subtle. So you have to ask yourself what this meme is asking you to agree with. You know, humor is a skeleton key to human psychology. If you can get someone to laugh somehow, regardless of the situation, then you have made significant progress in getting them on your team in some way. It is crucial to make people laugh. And that's why you see so many orators, so many public speakers going for a laugh in all but the most somber of speeches. They're trying to get people to be like, ha ha, yeah, he gets it. He gets it. So war with Iran. Okay. Yeah. Right on. And the scary thing is, I would say that and these online platforms are not going to help you. They're not supposed to. And they are amoral. They are neither good nor bad. They are just trying to keep you engaged and to move the money. And you're a medium through which that money moves.
Well, it's weird to think that memes can show up in your various feeds if it's actual user-generated content that is a meme like this, no matter who is generating it, even if it is for some nefarious means. But they can also show up in your feed via an advertisement, like we talked about, where you can literally be targeted by someone who's putting a meme out or an advertisement out that targets you that isn't necessarily an advertisement for a business, but it's, again, to move the needle in some small way for a cause. It's very possible, and it happened during that 2016 election.
Absolutely, yes. And we know that largely as a result of the controversy surrounding 2016, Facebook, Twitter, and so on started to make moves to fact-check claims, but they're kind of slow with it. Their process is spotty. There are serious questions and strong evidence that, at least in Facebook's case, ethical concerns took a backseat to potential profits. What this means right now, if you are listening, is that we are in a war. It is a war that knows no boundaries. It is waged across the planet. It is waged with ephemeral weapons in a digital sphere. And these weapons have real-world lasting consequences. And unless you happen to be part of a professional troll army right now, you're in the same boat as us, folks. We're hopelessly outnumbered. The conspiracy is real. The goal of memetic warfare is to move from the cloud directly into your mind. And the importance of this cannot be overstated. This is not hyperbole. This is not a sensationalism. This is happening, and it is happening to you. So now that we know this, we know memes can be another kind of weapon. We know they can be propaganda on steroids. Now we are armed with the most important weapon you can possess in this war, which is the power of critical thinking. And it's not a fun process, just to be honest with you. It's not something a lot of people do for fun because it's psychologically distasteful, right? To find new, diverse opinions that you may not personally agree with that burst your bubble. It bursts your social media bubble. That's not cool. I thought everybody was on board with me. Vibes is a great movie. I will hear no dissent.
Oh, God.
But you have to find it, though. You have to find it because we have the responsibility. Like, if we want to say we understand a given issue, then we need to hear from more than just the people who are hype manning us. We need to hear from more than just the people who are cheering for us in the stands. We need to understand all sides of an argument. Like, for instance, if you are, maybe you consider yourself an atheist, you have a higher responsibility to read the Bible than the people who consider themselves Christians, I would argue, because you need to know what you are disagreeing with. You need to know. And if you are, for instance, someone who has very strong, very specific spiritual beliefs, then it is also your responsibility to understand what other people's beliefs are, to understand what is the case that, you know, an atheist or a Buddhist or a Christian or whomever is making. That is the best thing you can do, and it is cognitively difficult. We talked about it before. Human hardwire is limited. Human hardwire, in terms of the engine of the brain, it feeds off feeling agreed with. And we have visceral, emotional, gut reactions to stuff that contradicts our worldview, whatever it might be. Like, you might think, I'm trying to think of an example that's not political because that stuff gets brought up all the time. Let's say you like soda, but you only like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or whatever. And then you take one of those blind taste tests and you figure out that if you didn't know the brand name, then they were much the same. I'm kind of word salading here, guys. I'm sorry for the TED Talk. It's just this is crazy important. You have to work against the way your brain is constructed to get to have the best chance of withstanding weaponized memes. But that being said, you know, we're talking about being active listeners, being active participants instead of passive listeners.
So I just have a couple of things I can relate to this before we get out of here. When I was a bit younger in my 20s, I was definitely somebody who was susceptible to getting a message sent to me, usually via social media, or reading an article and then feeling as though I needed to then send that message or that idea back out to everybody that I knew.
The chain letter. That's an early form, or like the, ooh, you know, yeah, the email chain letter, right?
Well, for me, it was Facebook.
Different, but
it
totally
was Facebook posts. It was all Facebook posts. That's the thing that existed. MySpace had a different function. This is when we were working early, Ben, at How Stuff Works, just before we started Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. And I remember how confident I was in all of my beliefs, and that when I was ingesting information, it was information generally that agreed with how I felt about most things. It was extremely liberal and it was extremely anti, status quo. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm saying that I was stuck in a bubble that I was only getting that information in, and I was sending that information directly back out as soon as it came into me. And I felt like I was doing the right thing, and I was helping to like change the world in some way. I just think that this kind of situation that we're discussing here is happening to many people right now. And that's why your message is so important, Ben, of do the work with yourself to like make sure you're seeing a big enough of a picture to understand what you're in fact doing. Because I didn't know what I was doing. I was just repeating. I was like, I was a repeater switch, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with that, I think you're hitting on something that everyone can agree with. No one likes to feel played. No one likes to feel like a rube, right? That is what's happening. And the best chance we have as a society, God, we live in a society. That's another meme, right?
We do.
The best chance we have is to exercise that critical thought and to put ourselves in cognitively challenging places. Or maybe we're overthinking this. Maybe we're exaggerating. Maybe we're embellishing the problem. What do you think? We can't wait to hear from you. Bonus points if you reach out to us and send some cool memes. Because I'll tell you what, I am addicted. No regrets. I scroll through like me underscore IRL all the time when I should be working. It's just great. Memes are just great. You know, I'm not being sarcastic. I f-ing love them.
But also inherently super dangerous and insidious and scary. But great.
Yeah. You know what I really want to see is a smash up of the three of our faces, you know, from a still image from one of these YouTube videos. That's probably, I don't know about that one. Maybe not that one. But I want to see it where it's like what Ben would say in this situation, what Noel would say, and then what Matt would say. I think that'd be hilarious if that could be a thing.
You're setting us up. You're setting us up because you know our fellow conspiracy realists are on the money with this.
Well, mine would always be like, but they're not so bad.
Like that. No, didn't someone do that already? Someone did a meme of us with like three people like in a fracas of some kind. It was an animated thing and it was like each of them represented one of us. And I can't remember what it was, but we've been memed a handful of times. But I saw an image today that I have not seen memed. And if any eagle-eyed conspiracy realists out there want to try their hand at this, there is an image of Kanye West and Kim Kardashian at this like red carpet event, and the comedian Amy Schumer did this prank where she's like crawling on the ground, and it's the perfect meme format because Kanye is looking at her with just disgust and Kim is like mildly amused and Amy Schumer just looks unhinged and clawing at the red carpet and crawling on the ground. So what do each of those figures represent? Let us know.
Mm-hmm. And shout out to all our friends on the internet who have memed us. I am especially big fan of the work of Hallelujah. It's the name I suspect is a pun. But yeah, we can't wait to hear from you. We can't wait to hear also any personal experience you have had with weaponized memes, or as dark as it is to point out, any experience you've had with someone who got played, who got their mind or their viewpoint altered by memes, especially if you saw the process. Where do I send these memes, you may ask? Well, we try to be easy to find online.
Social media is so weird, you shouldn't use it. Anyway, find us on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, where we're Conspiracy Stuff. On Instagram, we're Conspiracy Stuff Show. And you guys have Instagram accounts, right?
Yeah, I've got one. It's at How Now Noel Brown. I post a lot of memes there, actually, on the old stories. What about you, Ben? I'm not on Twitter. I am, but I don't really use it. I lurk.
You can find me at VibesFan69. No, I'm kidding. You can learn more about my various off-air misadventures and get a backstage look at a lot of the research that goes into these shows if you follow me at Ben Bolin, B-O-W-L-I-N, on Instagram, or at Ben Bolin, H-S-W, on Twitter. But wait, you're saying, hold your mimetic horses, guys. I agree with Matt. I don't sip those social meads, but I do need to contact you. Well, we have another way for you to do it, and you don't have to get on a computer.
That's right. You can give us a telephone call using analog methods, antiquated technology, or, you know, a cellular phone will also do the trick. You can call us at 1-833-STD-WYTK. Leave a message of the sound of Ben's dulcet tones. 3 minutes is the time that you shall have to tell your tale or share your verbal meme or what have you, your missive. And then make sure to let us know at the end or at the beginning or somewhere in the middle what to call you. Give yourself a cool nickname. Let us know if you want to remain anonymous. If you feel really strongly about it, we'll even use one of those fancy schmancy voice disguisers on you because we love you that much. And then you might hear yourself in one of our weekly listener mail episodes.
Yes, yes. And hey, if you don't like using your phone for what it's meant to be, which is a phone, that's okay. You can also send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.